The Mandy Connell Show is sponsored by Bell and Pollock Accident and Injury Lawyers.
Now, it's Mandy Connell on KOA News Radio, the voice of Colorado.
Welcome to a Tuesday edition of the show. Holy mackerel, do we have one planned for you today. As a matter of fact, coming up here in just a few minutes at 12:35, we are going to talk to Dr. John Douglas from Tri-County Health. As you can imagine, I am not pleased about the decision that Tri-County Health made yesterday. More on that in a moment. Because we have him coming up at 12:35, I'm jumping right into the blog after I talk to Dave, the intrepid producer, who is here as well. Hello, Dave.
Yes. Hello. I am ready to barrel.
Ready to barrel, because that's what we do on Tuesday. And of course, Michael Coover back at the station making us all sound delightful. So let me tell you where to find the blog first, KOANewsRadio.com. Click on anything that says Mandy Connell or look for the headline that says Mandy's Tuesday blog. This parent is not happy with Tri-County Health right now. Click on that, and here are the headlines you will find within.
Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. North and South America, and all the ships and clippers at sea. Let's go to press flash.
Today on the blog, Tri-County went and did it anyway last night. Dr. John Douglas from Tri-County is joining me at 12:35 to discuss it. Speaking of unelected boards mad with power, you need to watch Mike Pompeo's speech at the Freedom Conference. Representative Perlmutter is working hard to get people out of Gitmo. Come on, man, that was like 3 weeks ago. This is the useless Secretary of State Blinken acknowledges we've left Americans behind. Sure, why not have tampons just for men? A bunch of military dudes are demanding resignations. And now, a sea shanty just because. Israeli doctors say there's no reason to expect long-term effects from the vaccine. Want to stay sharp as you age? Don't stop working. No, pandemic babies do not have lower IQs. Where's Kamala? If you're still clinging to Sidney Powell to set the world right, watch this. I'm not saying we need to do this, but damn, this is juvenile and super funny. More teachers behaving badly. And the Newsom campaign releases Larry Elder in blackface photo. Those are the headlines on the blog at KOANewsRadio.com on the Mandy Connell page. And right back to the top of the blog, we are going to talk about yesterday at a meeting that did not have proper notice and took no public opinion. Tri-County Health Department decided to rescind their earlier mask order, which would have affected children ages 2 through 11 in school. And then they removed the ability of anyone to opt out of their edicts. And then they passed an even bigger mask mandate than the one they passed last week. Now, if you walk into a school in Douglas County, as a student, as a parent, as a teacher, you better have a mask on, according to Tri-County. As you can imagine, this went over really well in my house, as you can imagine. I'm not apoplectic because I'm trying to maintain, Dave, an even keel for my interview with Dr. John Douglas at 12:35, so I don't start turning into a shrieking bat when I talk to him. I have to like check my mom side and go fully with my talk show host side, which is generally more reasonable than my mom's side. Like, I recognize, you know, but we're going to talk to him and I'm going to be able to ask him the science that backed this decision. And I'm interested to see what that actual science is, because as you can imagine, I've spent just a little time gathering up my own science. And I'll be more than happy to send it to him in an email so he has access to the same information and studies that I'm seeing. And we'll see what happens going forward. Now, I also have on the blog today, and if the audio was better, I would play it for you guys. But it's not, you can hear it when you watch it on your computer or you watch it on your phone, but I don't think it is broadcast quality. But it is a woman who showed up at a school board, and guess what she does for a living, Dave? She does environmental health and protection. That's her actual job. Like, she goes into buildings and tests the air and tells people how to protect themselves against chemicals and other things like that. She specializes in protective equipment. So you would think that this woman might know what she's talking about. Guess whose side she's on? If you guessed my side, you would guess correctly. And this is really the root of my frustration. The root of my frustration is that we are not following the science on this stuff. The science on masking, at best, is muddled, but certainly does not demonstrate that we need to slap masks on preschoolers, you guys. Preschoolers. I mean, they can't even keep their fingers out of their noses. And we're going to tell a pre-K kid who's 2 or 3, who's 3 years old, that you got to wear a mask all day? That's sanitary. I mean, what do you think that kid's going to be doing with that mask? The point she makes, and she makes it beautifully in this video, and I would love for you guys to go watch it and share it, is that she followed a pediatrician up at the lectern, Dave. She walked up to the lectern to make her comments, and a pediatrician had placed her mask on the lectern. And this woman's like, okay, you know what? First thing, I'm going to clean this because those biologics are worse for me than anything else. And you just dropped it on the counter. Like, it was no big deal. And I thought, well, that's interesting that she would have noticed that. So it's a very compelling argument against the wearing of masks that we are wearing. And if she wants, and she makes a point, look, if you want kids in masks for their own safety, then we need to have new N95 masks that are fitted properly every single day. And if we can't do that, then we really are just, we're just spinning our wheels. Yes, Dave.
What do you think the reasoning behind these school boards taking these extreme masking measures, since, as you said, at the very best, it's debatable the effectiveness of masks. Why do you think they are so adamant about this and, you know, not even letting parents get their word in edgewise? Why are they so adamant about it?
Because they are protecting the adults that run the schools, mainly. I think that there's a lot of pressure, organized pressure from the teachers' unions, because in all of the reading that I have done, specifically about studies that have been done in the classroom setting, do you know who is the most effective in masking? It's staff. When the staff is masked, that is the best way to stop transmission, according to the studies that I've seen. And the students, it makes absolutely no difference. I mean, literally no difference. I went today and I used the Google and I put in the Google school COVID outbreaks. Okay, that's what I Googled. And then I started looking at the list of school outbreaks, because schools have been in session now in some places since the beginning of August. So we have schools that are having outbreaks. They're going to remote learning. They're doing all these things. But do you know how many of those outbreaks are in districts that require masking? And that's the point. This virus, especially the Delta variant, is highly contagious. It is going to rip through our school system. It is going to happen. The good news is that children are largely unaffected in any serious, significant, or long-term way by coronavirus. And quite frankly, if they got it in schools now, had a minor case, that means that their immunity, we know that the SARS immunity lasts at least 17 years, right? We now know from Israeli scientists that natural immunity is better than a vaccination. Now, I'm not in any way, shape, or form suggesting that parents try to infect their children, okay? I'm not suggesting that at all. But what I'm saying is we have to be realistic about what this illness is, how it affects children, and we need to be realistic about our expectations. Yeah, Dave.
Yeah, I think you pointed out on the blog someplace that flu is much more serious for kids than coronaviruses. Yet every year, ever since I was a kid and up to the present moment, I can't recall any time we had masking rules in school to prevent kids from dying of the flu.
Fun that you asked that question, because I just looked it up before the show. In the 2017-2018 flu season, and I figure that's the last pre-COVID flu season that we have, because 1920 kind of got swept up into COVID. In that flu season, 643 children under the age of 18 died of the flu, 30% of which were vaccinated. Okay. Less than 500 children have died of COVID under the age of 18. So what are we doing here? What are we doing here?
Are we panicking?
No, you know what it is? I do believe that the parents who are terrified of coronavirus are definitely organized and screaming louder than the parents who are just like, let us make up our own mind. Let us make up our own mind. They are so convinced that their children, if they get COVID, is going to die immediately, that they're making emotional, unreasonable demands, and they're getting met. They're getting met because there's too much of this, you know what, wearing a mask just isn't a big deal. Like, what's your problem? If you have asthma, it's a problem. If you get migraines, it's a problem. There are a lot of reasons. But the biggest reason is it is a fantasy. It is a fantasy that gives a false sense of security. We need to be focusing our children on washing their hands every 5 seconds. That has to be thing number one. We also need to be upgrading ventilation and putting in systems that can actually kill viruses in the air conditioning system. They exist. They're not even that expensive. There are other mitigation efforts that are more effective. And that's the way it's all shaking out now. So what we're doing is we're putting kids in masks. They spend all day touching, focusing on, adjusting, messing with their masks, therefore putting their hands into their face over and over and over again. And I just think it's a dumb idea, especially for kids that are 3 years old. Are you kidding me? You can't even get a kid to wipe their own butt at three, and you're going to tell them, put a mask on, don't play with it, leave it on there, don't touch it. Really? I mean, maybe you guys haven't been around a three-year-old in a while. That's just asinine. It's asinine. I taught, my first job, Dave, I don't know if I've ever told you this, was teaching gymnastics. I was in ninth grade, and I had been going to this gymnastics place for a long time, and then I got really tall, so it was over. And I taught a class of 3 to 5-year-olds. Do you know what I spent doing all class long? Pulling leotards out of little tushies. That's what I did the entire day, just pulling the leotards out of the tushies. They all walked around with little thongs, and I just pulled. And I'm thinking to myself, and now what are you going to tell these kids they have to wear a mask? This is insanity. Insanity. And by the way, I have the statement from the European CDC about their mask mandates for children. Spoiler alert, there aren't any. There aren't any. And it's just what we're doing makes no sense whatsoever. And it's just, I don't know. We're going to talk to Dr. John Douglas about it in about 15 minutes. So stay tuned for that. We have another story coming up at 1 o'clock, and that is CHASA, the Colorado High School Athletics Association. I am developing a real dislike for CHASA, and I don't understand why high schools allow this unelected board with no accountability to tell them what their kids can and can't do. I've got Igor Rakin on today. When you hear the latest thing that they did, which is just Igor's now suing. So we'll talk to him at 1 o'clock about why CHASA decided to disqualify a young swimmer over a medical condition that he has. This should go well. I have Mike Pompeo's speech from the Freedom Conference this past weekend on the blog today. And I got to tell you, if you're remotely interested in the history of the deal we made with the Taliban, you need to watch it. It's only an hour. But more importantly, I came away from this feeling like Mike Pompeo is a dark horse for the presidency. When you see him in this kind of in this fashion, where he's very loose and he's just very, you know, he's very comfortable and he's just talking and he's not doing official business. So he's not having to measure his words. He's just giving his opinion. Much different guy than I saw many, many times. And I came away, I told a couple of people we were with, I said, you know, I think I was kind of agnostic on him before. Like I had no opinion. It was just kind of, he's there. I know who he is. I know what he does, but I don't have an opinion on that. I came away with a very positive feeling about Mike Pompeo after this speech. So I would urge you to watch it. He does get into what's going on in Afghanistan during the speech. Very, very interesting history of that situation. Hey, Representative Perlmutter is busy working to get people out of Gitmo, as his Democratic colleague, Jason Crow, is still working diligently to get the people we've left behind in Afghanistan out. Representative Perlmutter is aiming his ire on getting the terrorists out of Gitmo, making sure they get home. That's his big priority. Great story about that today. And then somebody went back in time. Yeah, somebody went back in time to where Joe Biden was on with Clinton spokesperson George Stephanopoulos. And they just got, yeah, as a matter of fact, why don't I just play this for you guys? Because it's just super fun. It's real quick. Yeah.
All troops are supposed to be out by August 31st. Even if Americans and our Afghan allies are still trying to get out, they're going to leave?
We're going to do everything in our power to get all Americans out and our allies out.
Does that mean troops will stay beyond August 31st if necessary?
It depends on where we are and whether we can ramp these numbers up to 5,000 to 7,000 a day coming out. If that's the case, they'll all be out.
Because we've got like 10 to 15,000 Americans in the country right now, right? And are you committed to making sure that the troops stay until every American who wants to be out
yes.
is out?
Yes.
So weird. So weird, because they declared the war over yesterday and stopped all missions to get people out. But yeah.
And Secretary of State said there's still Americans left.
Correct. And, but they're the ones who don't want to choose to leave, Dave.
I don't think he actually made that distinction in the cut we just heard.
No.
Yeah, and he's directly contradicting his commander in chief, what he said not 5 years ago, but three weeks ago.
Yep. Anyway.
Usually, when you do that sort of thing, you get fired very quickly.
Nah.
But when
the internet, the internet is forever, Dave. The internet is forever. Thank God. We will continue with the blog later. I'm going to go ahead and take a break. Susan Witkin's going to tell us what's coming up in the news, because we've got Dr. John Douglas from Tri-County Health on with us next to talk about their decision yesterday to mask up everyone in schools. What do you have for me, Susan?
We're going to have a report about the plans to get the remaining Americans out of Afghanistan and a push to get rid of the Federal Reserve chairman. It's all coming your way at 12:30 right here on KOA News Radio, 850 AM and 94.1 FM.
Executive Director of Tri-County Health, Dr. John Douglas. Dr. Douglas, first of all, thank you for making time. I know that you are getting beaten up with whatever you decide. I am doing a lot of the beating on the radio. I'm going to be perfectly honest. I am one of those parents that is extremely unhappy with what happened last night at the Tri-County Health meeting. And I want to start with the decision, first off, to eliminate any opt-out provisions for the people that live under the Tri-County District. Where did that come from? And obviously it's been removed, but what happened there?
Sure. So the opt-out provision is something that our Board of Health implemented as a policy last November. It was done during a time when the pandemic was heating up. There were lots of community or public health orders impacting capacity of businesses and other entities in the community. There was a lot of concern about how to best balance that, because there were jobs at stake and businesses were being impacted and people were losing health insurance, et cetera. It was also a time in which the state health department and the governor was very active in executive orders and public health orders. We felt that it was a reasonable approach at the time, because we had so much contention, and frankly, Douglas County was unhappy enough with the situation that they were exploring leaving and forming their own health department. The board adopted the policy as an attempt to sort of, in the middle of a pandemic, avoid a messy breakup. We thought that with what was happening with the state health department and the governor, we could probably finesse it. It was always a little gray, to be honest with you, as to whether or not we really could be allowed to delegate a statutory duty to a non-public health group of elected officials. Statute's quite clear. Public health departments and directors have certain responsibilities. But we thought the finesse was probably reasonable given all the context. Fast forward, in the springtime, the governor began to say, look, things are getting better. Public health is a local matter. I'm going to leave it up to local public health departments. That stance has continued through the present day. We had a pretty good May and June, and then Delta hit town. And Delta has changed everything. Delta's twice as contagious, probably twice as severe, and it's begun, impacting particularly unvaccinated people. Those include anybody 11 and under, and include right now about half of our 12 to 18-year-old population. Given that consideration, given the crescendoing of transmission among kids, the crescendoing of school outbreaks, and in some cases, even classrooms going remote, we felt that we needed to act. We felt there was a vacuum of really public health being practiced per statutory requirement in our three counties that the opt-out was contributing to. It was creating a lot of confusion. Who gets to opt out? Is it county officials? Is it cities? Is it schools? And frankly, we had some of our counties feeling that what we had asked them to do was to take on the job of the public health department. So you guys are supposed to be the public health experts. Now you're asking us as boards of county commissioners to tell other elected boards of official school boards what to do. That seems really inappropriate. So there were a number of complications, Mandy, but the crescendoing of Delta, what we're seeing happening in other parts of the country where there's inadequate communicable disease control, strong recommendations from CDC and childhood health experts, particularly the American Academy of Pediatrics, and the recognition that I felt we needed to step up and provide public health leadership.
What kind of science, other than the recommendations coming from the CDC and the American Association of Pediatrics, what science have you guys looked at about masking students and its effectiveness? Because right now, the European CDC specifically does not recommend masking students under 12. And I want to know the science behind this, because I've spent the last 18 months educating myself by reading the studies, by reading everything. And at best, the science behind masking in schools is murky, especially when you take out other controls like distancing, proper ventilation, and hand washing. And it always feels like we are going to err on the side of the most invasive thing. And I know people say wearing a mask is no big deal, but if you have a kid who has migraines, it most certainly is a big deal. And so there are things that are being brushed aside. And I just want to know, what is the science that you guys are using?
Well, first of all, let's be clear. And if you have kept up with all the science, congratulations to you, because I don't know any public health official who's literally been able to keep up with all the published gray literature and opinion pieces on this. So if that's a true statement, congratulations. The science that we've been looking to is science based on the recommendations and the coalitions by CDC. Number one. Number two, we've been looking particularly at information that's been addressing school-based settings. Some of the strongest information and data comes out of a study in North Carolina conducted by the Duke Department of Pediatrics for their school system, looking at rates of transmission in settings where, as you correctly point out, many mitigation approaches had been used. But everybody who's looked at those mitigation approaches says that in the unvaccinated setting, unless you're going to have school outdoors, because I believe ventilation is fantastic if you can get people outdoors, the two most important things are going to be the use of masking and quarantine. Quarantine meaning you've been exposed to infection, you don't have it, you need to go home and hang out so you don't expose other people. The Duke team found that less than 1% of kids in those settings was ended up being infected. Their conclusion was that the largest predictor of prevention of transmission was, in fact, the universal use of masks. Colorado school districts in the metro area carried out a similar analysis last year, looking at the question of if a kid is exposed and quarantined, what percent end up getting infected? The answer was far less than 1%. The conclusion was lots of things happening, but school was not outdoors. There was no vaccine. Was that high levels, probably not perfect, high levels of mask wearing was far and away the most important.
But yet, I have a study of 1.6 million students across 64 school districts that showed nearly identical rates of COVID in schools with mask mandates versus schools without mask mandates. We also, today, I went to Google, I put in school COVID outbreaks. I started looking at each of these school outbreaks in the news. I started looking at how many of those outbreaks were in school districts that have had a mask mandate in place the entire school year. And what gets focused on is the school districts that don't have a mask mandate, when I can find almost an equal number who do have a mask mandate. So when we don't know, masking staff seems to work, because wouldn't you agree? The staff is really the most vulnerable here, because they're the ones more likely to have complications from COVID and have significant issues. Because frankly, children still make up 1.8% of the hospitalizations in this country right now, even with the Delta surge. We've lost less than 500 children due to COVID, according to the CDC's own website. So this is not an illness for children that is the same as it is for elderly people. And frankly, teachers have had the opportunity to get vaccinated. So why are we forcing everyone now? Everyone, the new mandate is vaccinated or not, you're slapping a mask on your face. If you believe vaccines work, why are we putting vaccinated kids and teachers in masks? Why would a parent who had reservations about getting a 12-year-old vaccinated but did it anyway, what do we say to them? No, sorry, your kid still has to wear a mask to school. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Andy, I can't follow all that. I'll do the best I can. That was a lot.
Sorry.
Let me start with the vaccine question. The vaccines work incredibly effectively to prevent severe complications.
Agreed.
Even in the best of circumstances, pre-Delta, they were never perfect. 95% is about as good as most vaccines get. That's what the early RNA vaccines showed. Fast forward to Delta, still highly effective, about 85% or so. That's really fantastic, since the major thing we want vaccines to do is prevent sickness and death. What we're realizing with Delta is that the protection against all infections, meaning minor or even asymptomatic infections, is less. Maybe turn it down to about 75%. That's still pretty good. It's not perfect. The other thing we've realized is that when you get infected with a breakthrough infection, your viral load, your likelihood of transmitting it to other people, appears as likely as an unvaccinated person. Ergo, masks work really well, if I could finish.
Sure.
Severity. They protect quite well, but not as well against all infections. And so when you ask me, what do I tell a kid who said, I got a vaccine and now I have to wear a mask? What I tell the kid is what I told my granddaughter last week. Delta has changed things. We want you to stay safe. We want your family to stay safe. And we want you to be able to stay in school. And although universal wearing a mask is no guarantee that schools will not have disruption, they do, and I believe, and you and I can sit down sometime quietly and look at the various studies we're looking or quoting here, provide far and away the greatest advantage, not perfect like vaccines, but far and away the greatest advantage to try to prevent transmission and keep schools from going remote. I get the aggravation of a kid like my granddaughter who got vaccinated because they thought it was going to be their ticket back to an open life. And I'm terribly sorry that Delta emerged, just as I'm terribly sorry that COVID came along in the first place. But whether we don't like it doesn't change the reality that it's here.
Since the CDC made the recommendation that vaccinated people should wear masks because they believe that they carried as much of a viral load and are more contagious in some cases, the study that they pinned that on, the underlying study out of Massachusetts, has been ripped to shreds by scientists and doctors who say it's a self-selected group. It's a very specific a kind of party scene that perhaps we don't see other places. And now I'm seeing more and more research coming out in the last 4 days that say, hey, hold the horses on that. So let me ask this question. If the science changes tomorrow, if we find out that vaccinated people do not carry a viral load, does the Tri-County Health Department end the mask mandate for vaccinated kids?
We're going to constantly adjust what we do based on the best science available. Let's be clear about that. Now, I think it's a little bit of an exaggeration, Mandy, in all candor, to say the Provincetown study has been ripped to shreds. This was a single isolated outbreak. No one ever said this is generalizable to the universe. It was a very, very powerful, large group of individuals. And if we collect other data that shows something different, will we learn from it and adjust? Absolutely. Will that create confusion because the public health people are always changing their mind? Yeah, probably. This is the problem we have. We learn more things. We try to adjust. We try to do the best job we can based on the data available. So we will absolutely be open to new data coming in and absolutely make adjustments when it's indicated.
Do you guys even consider the fact that the CDC is telling people to mask up their kids when the European CDC, where kids have been in school all last year, most of the time without masks across the board? There were some countries that put in some age requirements. Does that not affect the decision making at all? That we have a huge number of people in Europe that we can look to see exactly what's happening in real world environments. What does that have any credence at all?
It absolutely does. I mean, we look very closely at what's happening in other places. I will tell you, now, I don't know everything that's happened in Europe. We need to give you a hire you as a Tri-County associate because you've been
I can paper your email box every single day, Dr. Douglas. I'm not exaggerating when I say I have spent hours upon hours upon hours upon hours of my life investigating and reading this stuff every day because I want to bring my listeners the most accurate information I can bring them. I was an early vaccine supporter because I believe it works and I believe it prevents serious injury and death. But on the same token, I have not seen convincing evidence about masks. I've seen plenty of evidence that was done before coronavirus that clearly shows the surgical masks and cloth masks do nothing for influenza. And why would we think coronavirus would be different? So my frustration is that everybody says, follow the science. But when I bring science to the table, they go, oh, not that science. What about the Danish mask study that 5,000 people, half of which wore masks everywhere, half of which never wore masks, no statistical difference between the two groups when it came to COVID? I mean, these are the things that the CDC doesn't even talk about. And that was a random controlled trial. That's supposed to be the gold standard. This is my frustration and the frustration of a lot of other people who are doing the same things that I'm doing.
Yeah, fair enough. I've listened to you, and other times you do your homework. I get that. And you've obviously done your homework about this. I will tell you that this has been enormously controversial and confusing. Let's talk about the Danish study. There's a very nice description on the CDC's May science brief about that Danish study, about both the sample size as well as some of the ascertainment issues involved with that. So it's out there. It's very understandable that it would be part of the confusion about what's actually happening. Let me also say that, look, you know this because you've done your homework. It's far easier to determine that something works, yes or no, when one can control all the parameters of it. So the best data we have, as you just referred to, are randomized controlled double-blinded trials. Those are the kind of things we use for vaccines. That's why it sounds like both you and I agree that the vaccines are highly effective, and the millions of folks that have taken the vaccine since them have really confirmed their high levels of safety. The problem is, as you know, but let's just be sure your listeners know, that we can't do that sort of randomized double-blind placebo-controlled trial for masks. We have to rely upon epidemiologic and observational studies. They are going to inherently have different methodologies and potentially lead to different conclusions. That's why, as a public health scientist in the U.S., I want to get back to the European question in just a second. I have to rely upon the expertise that what I still think is a preeminent public health organization in the world, including the European CDC, including the WHO, concludes based on their synthesis and analysis. Now, I can't comment on the European situation writ large. I will tell you that the British situation, because the Brits have not used masking very much either. And frankly, it's been a controversial topic. They have used quarantine much more actively than we have. They have had even more school disruptions than we have. Now, last spring, when I talked to my superintendents, again, this is not a scientific poll, I've got 15 of them across Tri-County, you know, I said to them, so what's the worst thing for you? And the worst thing for them last spring was the yo-yo of quarantines. We're in this week, we're out next week. We got another problem, we're out again. Would it be worth it to you to have modifications such as masking? And they already knew how controversial masking was. It's only gotten more so. But the answer was, if we could reduce, ideally prevent, but certainly reduce the yo-yo experience with quarantines, keeping our kids, even though half their face is covered, in school, that would be preferential to us. Now, let me, because I'm sort of thinking as we talk of other questions you've raised, masks can be exempted in kids. If your kid's got a bad migraine that's aggravated by masks and has a note from your physician that says this child shouldn't wear a mask because it aggravates their migraines, that's something that our public health order will say schools and child care centers should take into consideration.
Well, I have a listener who said, will you ask the doctor why my daughter's school district is rejecting her neurologist's note stating that because of her rare brain disease, she should not wear a mask. So that message is not trickling down. Dr. John Douglas is my guest. Dr. Douglas, can you stay? And can we continue this conversation in the next segment? Do you have time?
How long is the next segment?
We can stay as long. Just tell me when you need to be out. It's about a 10-minute break, so we come back at 12:07-ish or somewhere around there. Or excuse me, 1:07, and then I can get you out of here whenever you want. I just have more questions, and I have to
sure.
Take a break. All right.
So shall I come back around 1:05 and we'll talk for another 10 or 15?
That would be great. That would be fantastic. Okay. Dr. John Douglas from Tri-County Health is my guest right now, and we will come back and talk to him in just a few minutes. Let's talk to Susan Witkin, though, and find out what's happening in her news.
Yeah, coming up at 1 o'clock, I'll talk about how hospitals are dealing with COVID in Colorado and school districts and the free rapid COVID tests from the school state. Are they accepting them? 1 o'clock right here, KOA News
have
Radio,
on his heels.
850 a.m. and 94.1 FM.
Chat message?
Mandy Connell Show is sponsored by Bell and Pollock Accident and Injury Lawyers.
Now, it's Mandy Connell on KOA News Radio, the voice of Colorado.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. We are continuing our conversation with Dr. John Douglas, the executive director of Tri-County Health. Last night, Tri-County made two big decisions. One, they eliminated the opt-out provision that would have allowed people to opt out of any mandates that they have put in place. And then they instituted a mask mandate for every single person in every single school, regardless of vaccination status. And that is what we are talking about today. Dr. Douglas, you spoke in the last segment about relying on the CDC and you know, their expertise on this. Until COVID, I probably would have too. My faith in the CDC has been shaken by their own actions. And I have a couple of examples that I want to share with you. The CDC in the Kentucky study that allegedly showed that people who were previously infected with COVID shows that unvaccinated individuals are more than twice as likely to be reinfected with COVID than those who were fully vaccinated. But when you click through to the study, which I did, because that's what I do, in the study, there's a huge set of limitations put in by the study's authors. And at the very last part of those limitations, it says, finally, this is a retrospective study designed using data from a single state during a 2-month period. Therefore, these findings cannot be used to infer causation. And yet that's what the CDC did in its own press release. So these things are very frustrating to me. I have other examples like that. And I'm not saying that we should ignore the CDC. I'm not saying that at all, because there are only governmental body at the federal level that is giving us guidance on this stuff. What I'm saying is check their work, because there are things happening at the CDC that do not align with the studies that they are presenting, that they allege say one thing, when in reality, when you read the study, they say something entirely different, including the Georgia school study, where the CDC alleges, and I'll pull this up so I get it right, the CDC alleges that wearing masks is necessary, and schools without masks have higher case rates. Now, that in and of itself is a true statement, but not statistically significant enough higher cases to make this a firm example of masking working. Now, this is my frustration when we say we're going to rely on the CDC. That's why I'm saying, are you reading the studies? Because the CDC is misrepresenting what is in the studies that they're then presenting to back up their case. Have you experienced any of this?
Well, Mandy, I'm sorry, you were moving fast enough. I didn't catch the first study. So I'll start with the second study about the Georgia schools. I will agree with you that there was a significant reduction related to teacher masking, but not student masking. Now, I don't think, it was pretty close, and the trends were absolutely in the same direction. So certainly from a plausibility perspective, there was nothing contradictory about it, but the sample size didn't confirm at the same level of statistical significance. And by the way, we typically use a P less than 0.05. That means there's a less than 1 in 20, 5% chance that we're arriving at these conclusions erroneously. So it didn't meet that threshold. I don't really believe, I haven't gone back and looked at the exact wording, that it was sort of smudged over and overstated. I will say that, look, what we're dealing with COVID, it's a once in a century pandemic. We're dealing with once in a century measures to try to control the pandemic. The thing that's been crispest, that has come out of the whole fight against COVID have been those things we can test by randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trials, i.e. vaccines, and to a certain extent, some of the therapeutics, such as infusions of monoclonal antibodies. It's much harder with things that one can't control. And that's why that one has to take this aggregation of studies and try to triangulate what the particular trend of the message is. There will undoubtedly be outliers in that sort of thing when we can't control all factors. That's just the wicked dilemma we're left with. I was badly hoping that when we got the vaccines, I was going to take care of the problem. When I heard the vaccines were 95% effective, I thought, hooray, we're out of here. As long as we don't get a variant. Oh, but by the way, viruses evolve. They're Darwinian. They evolve toward more rapid transmission, and they evolve to escape our control measures. Gee, I sure hope that doesn't happen. Alpha, not so bad. Beta, worse, but not so bad. Gamma, not so bad. Delta, much worse. So we ended up with a circumstance where our vaccines were good, but not enough. And so we've had to go back to what I really do hear your frustration. And you're coming across to me as a public health official as really thoughtful. And I think the kind of questions you're asking and channeling are very legitimate questions that I know many of your listeners are asking. I would just tell you that the ability to try to take protective measures with our inability to control everything like we can in randomized clinical trials makes things like the use of masking or ventilation inside schools, HEPA filters, or hand washing or disinfection, these become very, very challenging to work through. I still believe strong aggregation of data suggests the protective benefit of masks, but not perfect. But I really will acknowledge that there are certainly studies and probably parts of the data that are less than completely satisfying. And I'll acknowledge what you asked me earlier. We've absolutely got to learn as we go and should be learning as we go.
I want to come back to the Danish mask study because you talked about there were issues with its execution. In my mind, the Danish mask study is the most perfect study of mask wearing that we have because they were real people using masks the way real people use masks, which is incorrectly, badly, touching their face all the time. It's not a laboratory that we live in. And to expect a 3-year-old pre-K student to correctly wear a mask, not consistently touch it all the time when they're touching everything else and not washing their hands every 5 minutes is to me a pipe dream. To look at the studies that we do have that come from a lab that show aerosols coming through masks or not coming through masks, those are fantastic in a laboratory. We don't live in a laboratory. We live in a world where people do not do the right thing and people do the things badly that they're told to do. So in my mind, honestly, the Danish mask mandate or the Danish mask study is the most accurate representation of mask usage in society. And so when it's dismissed as, oh, that's not good enough, well, 2,500 people wore masks, 2,500 people didn't, and we have the results. So that's how people use masks in the real world.
Yeah, fair enough. I do want to say that again. This was an attempt at a population-based study, and although they did enroll, as you said, large numbers of people, it actually ended up only being about a fraction of the population that they were trying to draw conclusions for. I also want to quickly address Mandy, I agree with you. We're not rats. We don't live in laboratories. What happens in laboratories doesn't necessarily get replicated in the real world. I will tell you that from personal observation, I'm not a teacher. I'm a grandfather. I spent the weekend with my two granddaughters. They don't like masks. But if you say, look, guys, we got to wear masks. We're going out to blah, blah, blah to see so-and-so. They complain. It slips down below the nose. They pull it back up if you ask. Is it perfect? Absolutely not. Is it better than not having masks at all? And do our kids, frankly, do a better job if we're giving them coherent messages like, listen, I'm really sorry. When we go to preschool, we got to wash our hands before we eat. We have to wash our hands after we go to the bathroom. We've got to wear a mask. This is part of how we take care of each other. Is it going to be done perfectly? Probably not. You go into hospitals and do bathroom studies and watch whether doctors and nurses will wash hands. And unfortunately, it doesn't turn out to be everybody. But it is a biologically plausible way to enhance the reduction of transmission in settings where we've got so many vulnerable kids.
The fact of the matter is that during flu season, and I looked at the 2017-2018 flu season because I figured that was the last flu season unadulterated by COVID fully, because 2019-2020, there was definitely an effect of COVID there. But during that flu season, we had 643 children under the age of 18 die of the flu during that flu season. So are we now to expect that during flu season, we are going to put kids in masks again? I think a lot of parents are just asking, when does it end? Where do the numbers have to be? What's the metric for when we get to unmask our children?
Yeah, these are very fair questions. You know, there are a lot of places where not necessarily mandatory, but masks are worn during flu season. I do want to correct one of the things you said before. There actually is a large body of literature that wearing masks does reduce transmission and acquisition of flu. The same has been shown for respiratory syncytial virus. So what we're saying about COVID is not at all unique to this virus. It's been seen with other viruses as well. Look, I would not. Let me point out that for flu, as a reminder, we have vaccines. They don't work as well. They're actually recommended for everybody 6 months of age and older. We probably don't do a whole lot better any year than about 50-55% of folks getting vaccinated. We got a little better last year, but that's a major difference in terms of where we stand with COVID versus the flu. And while I hesitate, because things change so much, to say, look, Mandy, when we get up to 50% of our kids vaccinated, then we can burn the mask and throw them away and have a liberation party.
So it's all about vaccination. So that's where we're headed. I think it's all about vaccination.
I do think vaccination will end up being a major driver of this. As long as we're not being outpaced by the variants. So again, I think people will argue over what level of vaccination is appropriate. But I do think in the final analysis, it's our most effective tool. And high levels of it, including in young kids, is our best exit strategy.
What about people who say, including me, why do I want to medicate my kid for something that is not likely to cause them serious harm? I mean, statistically, you're talking about a fraction of 1% of children who have died from COVID or COVID-related causes. It's my understanding from my reading that they all had a significant underlying health condition. They had leukemia. They had some other significant illness that exacerbated COVID to the point that they could not fight it. And I understand that. And don't get me wrong, I don't want to act like I'm downplaying any death of any child. I don't want to. I'm not at all, because for those parents, it certainly is significant and horrible. But that being said, we don't necessarily provide treatments and medications for things that provide low risk to kids already. I mean, we're not giving kids shingle shots when they're 15 years old. There's all kinds of things. It doesn't make medical sense to me to treat for something that more than likely is going to be resolved with no significant long-term impact.
Well, fair question. And again, just to be sure I understand it, you're talking about, why would I give my kid a medication? You mean a vaccine, correct?
Yeah, a vaccine for something that they're not, most likely not going to die from, you know, or even have a significant issue with. A vast majority of children that get this have no ongoing effects from it. No long-term effects at all. No significant outcomes for them. A vast majority.
Well, I think we can say pretty definitely that the vast majority of kids do not get severe acute illness. That's pretty clear, at least as it's been ascertained so far. There's still a lot of effort to try to understand the degree of acute illness with Delta. We've got five studies actually, with one published this weekend telling us it is probably twice as severe in adults. We still do not know, in spite of the reports coming in from pediatric ICUs across the South, whether this is a result simply of more kids getting infected or whether it is more severe. So that's an issue that is still being evaluated. We're learning as we go. I will take issue with your point that there are no long-term impacts. Long COVID, which absolutely occurs in kids, but whose duration and quantitation, that is it 1%, 5%, 20%, we don't know yet. Now, is that a reason to give a vaccine tomorrow to a four-year-old? You know, probably not. But that is something we're going to be needing to learn about. I think you could debate, Mandy, what about the five-year-old? Let's say the FDA does an EUA or a licensure in December for a five-year-old. What's the pro-con of my kid getting vaccinated at that point? You know, it's all a risk-benefit trade-off. How safe are the vaccines, and how much do you want to reduce the chance of your kid getting, you know, maybe not a hospitalizable illness, but a potentially school impacting illness or a transmissible illness. I think we'll be working through those risk benefit metrics when we actually get the vaccines. I will note that we do use other vaccines such as mumps, for example, for infections that, thank God, rarely cause severe side effects. You look too young to have ever had mumps, but I had it, and I got basically swollen parotid glands. And, you know, there are some kids who get mumps, encephalitis, quite rarely, mumps, orchitis, infections of the testicles, pretty uncommon. But there are, if you will, a cascade of risk benefits as to when it's worth it and when it's not. And I think we'll be doing that for the 5 to 11-year-old group.
And I think that a lot of people, the concern stems from the fact that this is relatively new technology. And though I absolutely believe in it, I'm vaccinated, I talk about it on my show all the time. For adults, that's one decision. For children, it's another. It's the same reason that we don't let kids drink alcohol and smoke cigarettes, because it has a much different effect on children than it does on adults. That's the concern that a lot of people have. And if that's the move, then when are we, if assuming that the FDA, which, by the way, I think I read that the soonest the FDA approval for children could possibly be fast tracked is like January of 2022. I read that yesterday. So does that mean kids are going to be masked until what, 50% of kids get vaccinated? 60? People want to know when it ends. That's it.
Sure.
That's what they want to know. When does it stop?
You know, I wish I had a crystal ball to say. I don't. I think it's unlikely, but it could change. I mean, Delta went up and down in India, as you may recall. That was without a lot of vaccinations. It was with a lot of mortality and morbidity, but it went up and went down. That was probably an example of natural herd immunity. We don't know what's going to happen in India in the aftermath. So I don't know that I can really predict what's going to happen with Delta between now and the time that vaccines are licensed. I am fearful, because fall and winter tend to be worse time for respiratory viruses, including COVID, that it will be worse rather than better. But look, it could change. So could we be at a point where we don't think we need to use masks prior to there being widespread vaccination? I think that's possible. I don't think it's likely. I understand very much that everybody, frankly, including my granddaughter, would like to know, look, how long does this have to go on? And I wish we could provide that. I think the best answer I can give you is, frankly, the fairest answer is we will follow the data very closely and try to require these things for as short a period of time as possible.
One last question, because we're actually out of time and over time. Should we expect, because the CDC recommends indoor mask wearing in areas that are areas of high transmission, which includes Douglas, Adams, and I can't even remember who the third one is right now that's in our
Arapahoe.
Thank you, Arapahoe. And we're at that level now. So why is there not a mask mandate for everyone indoors?
I don't think we're going to get back to that, but it's not impossible. We have certainly are messaging, and I hope you're going to help us message the fact that they're recommended in indoor settings, indoor public settings, for the reasons we talked about earlier, not just the Provincetown study, but other sources of data that suggest that vaccinated people can get quiescent or low symptom infection and transmit. I'm really hoping that we can pace ourselves enough with vaccines and pace ourselves enough with voluntary use to not require that. It may surprise you, but I take zero pleasure in doing these public health orders. And I certainly don't want to do additional ones unless the data tells me they're needed. So I think it's hard for me to predict. I don't think it's likely at this point, but like it is in schools, will be watching it quite closely.
Dr. John Douglas, Executive Director of Tri-County Health, I'm going to disappoint you. I'm never going to advocate for a mask mandate of any kind. I still don't believe they do what you think they do. And I'm never, ever going to be on your team on that. But thank you for coming on the show. I very much appreciate it. We will agree to disagree. And moving forward, we will watch the data, both of us. And I'm going to paper your email box with studies. I promise you I will. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mandy.
All right.
Take care.
Let's check in with Susan Witkin, find out what is happening in her neck of the woods. What do you have going on in the news?
We've got the Arapahoe County Sheriff under investigation. I'm going to tell you why on KOA News Radio, 850 AM and 94.1 FM.
little long in that last interview, so we are late getting to our next guest, who was kind enough to let me bump him for that conversation with Dr. John Douglas from Tri-County Health. Igor Rakin is an attorney, and he and I share a common goal, and that is to see the end of the monopoly, unaccountable organization, CHASA, as it oversees Colorado high school sports. And he's on to talk about yet another thing that CHASA did, because it's all about CHASA just lording their will over everyone else. This is like two interviews in a row about that, Igor. Thank you for coming on the show. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
So what's this story about? We talked, by the way, for those of you who missed Igor on the show, how many months ago was that? Three or four months ago?
3 or 4, yeah.
Yeah. He was on because CHASA was just declining transfers for students during COVID for no rational good reason. Now we've got a new one. Now we've got CHASA eliminating a student from a swim meet. Tell me what happened.
Well, this one is even dumber, which of course is not surprising given that CHASA is always trying to outdo itself in that department. Here we have a kid with type 1 diabetes, and he just wants to swim. So because he has type 1 diabetes, he's got a glucose monitor on his arm. And because he's swimming, he needs to put tape over it. We're talking about a 2x2 inch piece of tape. This hasn't been a problem all year long. He did 7 swim meets. Nobody said anything to him about it. Then he and his teammates go to the state championships. And an official says, well, what's that on your arm? He says, my glucose monitor. And there's a conversation that takes place. And he said, you can take off the tape and the glucose monitor or you're disqualified.
What?
Well, yep. He can't take off the tape and the glucose monitor because he's diabetic. And when he's swimming, of course, that could lead to a drop in his blood sugar when he's exerting himself heavily. So he has to get disqualified. And because he was on a 4x100 relay team, the entire team got disqualified because they couldn't find a replacement fast enough.
Now, what are the rules around that? As a student who has some kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Medical exception? Is that a medical exception? What is that
called?
It's
a disability. This is protected under the Americans with Disabilities Act. And he's protected under the Americans with Disabilities Act.
So how do they cover that? How do you, what is his responsibility?
Actually, the responsibilities are more on CHASA because CHASA is what's known as a public accommodation. And they have to make sure they don't discriminate against anyone that they work with. So they have to make reasonable accommodations for him. And a reasonable accommodation is allowing him to wear a glucose monitor and a piece of tape to cover it. But they didn't allow him to do that at this point.
So let me ask, so they got to DQ'd from that meet. What does that mean? Does that hurt their chances of going further? Oh, this was the state meet, wasn't it?
It was the state meet, right. But the problem is what's going to happen next year.
Right.
Because who knows if he's going to be able to compete next year, and who knows if a coach is going to want to take him on if they're worried that he's going to get disqualified. Because remember, under CHASA rules, if you have an ineligible athlete who competes on your team, all of the records of that team are wiped out.
This has to be a clear violation of the American with Disabilities Act. Now, we talked about this last time. CHASA is not a governmental agency, right? It's a quasi.
They're kind of a governmental agency. And Maggie, that's one of the problems, is that CHASA answers to nobody. At least, you know, if you're screwed over by some other lower governmental agency, you can go to a higher governmental agency. Like in a school, for example, you have a problem, you go to the school board, or you go to the Colorado Department of Education. But here, if CHASA screws you over, good luck. There's really not a whole lot you can do, which is exactly why we filed a complaint with the U.S. Department of Justice, because somebody has to get them under control.
So what happens next with this? I've never known anyone who filed a complaint with the Department of Justice. What does that even look like?
What we want the Department of Justice to do is come in here, investigate, and force CHASA to actually behave properly as a proper public accommodation. There's a few easy things to do here. I mean, the easiest thing to do is, of course, behave with common sense and say, look, that thing on his arm is a glucose monitor. It's not a rocket blaster that's going to propel him through the water like Michael Phelps. That's the simplest solution. Or what they could just do is say, hey, kids with glucose monitors can compete in sports, because I don't know how in the world a glucose monitor could actually enhance performance.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, everybody knows all the kids are on the glucose now, Igor. All the kids are juicing with the glucose. That's what's happening.
That's right. You get yourself a Twix right before an athletic meet, and you are getting ready to win a gold medal.
So let me ask you, because I've had this conversation off the air with multiple people. What does in your perfect world, like if you could fix the situation with Chassa, what would you like to see happen? Because I want to start getting in the ears of perhaps state level politicians. Who needs to engage on this to rein this organization in?
The state needs to exercise control over Chassa. Okay. The state funds schools, and schools pay Chassa in order to be a governing body. So the state can absolutely exercise control over Chassa whenever they want. The other thing is that Chassa needs to be a lot more transparent as an organization. The Colorado Open Records Act doesn't even apply to Chassa like it does to other government agencies.
How is that possible? Is this where the quasi-governmental agency thing comes
in? Yes. That's the problem. Like, for example, I mostly represent kids with disabilities before Chassa, and I've wanted to know how many hardship waivers has Chassa issued to kids with disabilities over the past three years. I made this request of Chassa. They told me to pound sand, and there is nothing I can do about it.
That seems insane to me.
There's no checks or balances here, are there? No, you know how it is, Mandy. When you have a government agency that doesn't have any kind of oversight, forget even government, it's just people. People are going to behave badly when there is no accountability. And that's exactly what's happening here. The commissioner, Rhonda Blanford Green, has been there for a very long time. She knows that she has the support of the board, and she knows that there's really nobody else who can do anything to her. So this is the kind of behavior you're going to have.
Well, so it seems to me that we need to get in the ears of our elected representatives and ask them to make this a priority, because people don't realize Chassa. A lot of people think of Chassa just in terms of high school football, but they cover every sport. This is a swimming case. So if your kid plays sports in high school in Colorado, there's a chance that this board can make an arbitrary decision and not tell you why and prevent your kid from being able to compete in whatever they're choosing to compete in. That's the reality. It seems like where we are now.
Mandy, it's not just a chance. I mean, I got several phone calls this morning and signed up another client who's being discriminated against with a disability. This happens all the time. I field several phone calls every week, every month about something else that has happened with Chassa. And I always have to explain to parents how hard it is to fight Chassa because there is no oversight.
Okay, this is my new project. Igor, you fight from that end. I'll fight from the other end to get some accountability and some oversight by the state of Colorado. And in all honesty, this should be a bipartisan issue, because it's not Republican kids, it's not Democratic kids, it is kids that are being negatively affected by this sort of mad with power organization. They truly are mad with power. And I would hope that maybe there are some legislators out there who might listen to this and say, okay, we're going to take some action.
Well, the two big laws here that protect kids were both passed by Republicans. The Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973, who was in office at that point, and then, of course, the ADA, which was put into law by the first George Bush. So absolutely, this is a bipartisan issue.
I do want to give out your information, Igor, because you said you got a couple calls today. I'm guessing there may be somebody in this audience. You can find Igor by going to ColoradoLawTeam.com. That's really the easiest way, don't you think? ColoradoLawTeam.com.
Yes, ma'am.
So I would love you to have your phone. No, wait a minute. Let me walk this back. I don't want this to happen, but right. If more parents and more kids are having problems with Chassa, Igor's your guy. Go ahead and give him a call at ColoradoLawTeam.com, and let's make life miserable for them the way that they have made life miserable for so many student athletes over the years. And by the way, I've been asking people that I know, and I've not asked Dave Logan this question, so I want to be clear that I am not talking about Dave Logan. I know three other coaches, and I asked all of them about Chassa specifically. And the question went, hey, what are your thoughts on Chassa? The first thing they did was roll their eyes. The second thing they did is tell me I will never go on the air with this. And the third thing they did was tell me that it's a garbage organization. They hate them and would love to get out from under them. So this, but that nobody wants to say it out loud because they're afraid of being retaliated against. That's
Mandy, everyone knows this. I was a teacher for 10 years before. We dealt with high school athletics all the time, and everyone thought the Chassa was ridiculous. Nothing has changed.
And here we are. Igor Rakin, I really appreciate you taking this on, and keep me posted. When you get more clients, we'll keep talking about this. Because, like I said, I cannot stand unelected bureaucrats having dictatorial powers, and that's what we have here, and it has to be stopped. And I'm hoping that some politicians are out there listening that will start addressing it from the other end as well. Igor, I appreciate your time today, man.
Thank you, ma'am.
No problem. We will talk to you later. And now we're going to talk to Susan Witkin and find out what is coming up in her news. What do you have for me, Susan?
We've got the president. He is now talking about ending the 20-year war in Afghanistan. And yes, he talked about I heard that strawberry.
Did it take a victory lap? Was it, because if it's a victory lap, I want to puncture his tires, but go ahead.
You may not have to puncture the tires. He's saying this is why these are some of the Americans who were left behind. Why are they still there? What's going on? Can they still get out? The answer was yes. Also, Mandy had a full hour with the executive director of the Tri-County Health Department. The bottom line, I'll tell you what he said. I've got it for you. 2 o'clock right here. KOA News Radio, 850 AM, 94.1 FM.
Mandy Connell Show is sponsored by Bell and Pollock Accident and Injury Lawyers.
Now, it's Mandy Connell on KOA News Radio, the voice of Colorado.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the third hour of the show. Wow, that last hour and a half was like whiz-bang fast. And I kind of want, I know we don't have the same audience every hour to hour, but I'd love to get your feedback on the interview with Dr. Douglas. I'd love to know what areas I missed, what you would have liked me to ask, and your general feeling about Tri-County Health after that interview and this mandate. I got to tell you, I am more firm than ever that this is stupid. I'm trying to be tactful, but there was absolutely nothing convincing for me in that interview. And frankly, and I've talked about this before, I've read so many studies, and I'm reading as many studies as I possibly can as they're coming out, and apparently I'm the only one. I mean, that was frustrating. You like to think the experts are more well-informed than you are, and I did not walk away from that interview. And I'm not disparaging Dr. Douglas, but when he said, oh, we can't possibly keep up with all the studies, well, how can you not? You're making policy decisions that are going to affect thousands and thousands of people. It's your responsibility to read all the dang studies, not just the ones that confirm your bias. Yes, Dave.
You know, what was frustrating to me is...
Wait, hold that thought 1 second. 303-713-8585 is the number. That's 303-713-8585. Or hit us on our Centura Health text line. That is 56690. I apologize, Dave. I wanted to do that before I went to you. Go ahead.
That's fine. What frustrated me most is that he acknowledged the validity of almost every question you asked that were direct contradictions of what his office has said. Yet he didn't refute any of the points you made. He simply acknowledged the validity of asking the question. He's a master at ducking questions. There were no direct answers.
This is one of those situations where I would have liked to have had a really high level discussion about the science. That's what I was hoping for when I sent an email this morning. I said, I really want to know the science behind this. And you can't just deflect to the CDC and not give me the science. Because two examples right out of the chute where the CDC completely misrepresented the study underlying, you can't blow that off. You cannot blow that off. I you know, just like I believe, fair or not, that police officers who have the right and ability to take away someone's right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness have to be held themselves to the highest standard. If you are making policy decisions that affect thousands and thousands and thousands of people, especially controversial policy decisions, it is incumbent upon you and your organization to clearly delineate every aspect that you use to come to this decision making. And the CDC says, frankly, at this moment in time, is not good enough. When I can demonstrate the CDC showing the bias, and when he brushed off the Danish mask study as somehow not scientific because it was in the real world, y'all, I had to not even say anything at that moment. I just had to calm down, in through the nose, out through the mouth.
At the same time, however, he acknowledged that lab tests aren't always that conclusive. And at the next sentence, he's saying, no, but that study doesn't prove anything.
Yeah.
So I don't get it.
Let me go to the phones because we've got people lined up. I'm going to start at line four because I think Jeff called in first there, Kuv. Let me get Jeff. Hey, Jeff, you are on KOA. What's on your mind?
Hey, man, can I ask you a question?
Shoot.
Are you doubting the science now?
Doubting what science?
Or did...
Which
you
science?
Don't follow the science and all this and all that?
No, I got to tell you, I am doing everything in my power to follow the science by reading all of these studies. Like, that's why I'm doing it, because I believe in science. But what's happening is that we are seeing politics being injected into science decisions and into policy decisions that should be based on science, not emotion, not angry parents, nothing else. If I was just an angry parent, if I was just mad and I didn't have any of the data and I haven't done any of the reading that I have done, I think I would feel like maybe I didn't have as good an argument. But I can tell you I can point to so much data that I feel like the science that backs me up is there.
Okay, because I was curious to wonder if you questioned the science. But my other question is that I think a lot of people are. And now they're wanting to mask up again and all of this and follow the science. And I'd like to also quote from you, from Thomas Sowell. You were talking about the kids in school vaccinate or having to mask up and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Well, thing about it is, I saw a Thomas Sowell's quote that says, when you get people to mask up like that, and after a while, they wear the mask as normal. After the virus is over with. Okay. And also, I would also like to have you consider that maybe having the kids mask up isn't, and you're right, it is politics. I think what they're trying to do is further indoctrinate our kids with these masks.
I agree wholeheartedly, which is one of the reasons that I'm fighting against this so hard. But also, the science is on my side. Wearing a mask, right. And I appreciate the phone call very much, Jeff. Wearing a mask dehumanizes people. It dehumanizes people. It's why Muslim women are forced to wear a burqa, because then they're no longer human, right? They're no longer people. They're just a block of fabric. And getting kids to wear masks is another way to tell kids that whatever the government tells you, you do it. That's another way of getting compliance early on. Joe Camel taught us years ago, you got to go after the kids and get them early. And if you don't think that that's why teacher unions want your kids at pre-K now and not just from kindergarten on, that's precisely why. They want access to your kids from the very moment that they're conceived at this point. But secondarily, that's not why I'm going at this mask mandate. I think masks are stupid. I don't think they do what they say they're going to do. Rand Paul actually just retweeted out a study, and I tweeted it out so I can find it later. I haven't read it yet. But apparently now the University of Louisville has found that mask wearing has no effect on COVID infections across the country. So I'll read that and we'll do that tomorrow. Let me grab Eric and Bennett quickly here. I'm going to try and get through as many calls as I can. Hey, Eric, you are on KOA. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon, Mandy. Hey, just want to say a great show today. Your points were right on. Appreciate all the research and studying that you do put into your work there. You had great points. The one question I would have liked to maybe have broached is the whole political thing that got brought up at the Tri-County Health meeting last night and some of that and where that was going. I mean, I don't know if they could have talked about it or not, but it sure seems like there was a lot of political influence there.
And Eric is talking about a discussion about whether or not the initial meeting or even this meeting is actually an invalid meeting because of procedural stuff. I really wanted to keep this because it was Dr. Douglas. I wanted to keep it on the science stuff. I didn't want to get into the kind of whatever the, you know, background machinations are, because that wasn't what I wanted to talk to the doctor about. So that was a conscious decision to just not even bring that up, Eric. I was just like, you know what? That'll all play out in the news. Yeah.
Well, and the other thing was, is he did the same thing with, I don't know if it was a doctor, the guy from Douglas County, Kevin. He was throwing him the same thing about his data and how it didn't make sense. And he would never rebuke it or have any kind of comment about it. It was just like he ignored it and went away. It was pretty sad. These guys are supposed to be taking care of us, yet they don't do the research and their homework. And then they don't back up their numbers and what they're applying it to.
Exactly.
Very frustrating.
So,
trust me, Eric, I feel you on that. I appreciate the call very much. Let me grab Corey. Hey, Corey, you were on KOA. What's on your mind?
Hey, can you hear me?
I sure can. Go right ahead.
Okay. So thanks again. I echo what the previous caller just said. I really appreciate it. I actually spent the morning down at the Arapahoe County Commissioner public hearing this morning and got to speak there as well with them. And it sounds like you're trying to keep this to the science, but I'm curious just what are Tri-County's thoughts on all these counties wanting to disband from Tri-County? Then they'd basically be left with nothing. Did you guys get into that, or did you kind of want to not talk about that?
No, that's the political aspect of it. I do know that the reason that they put in the opt-out provision in the first place was to keep Douglas County in the fold. I have not heard, and I'm not saying that there's not anything out there. I have not heard from Douglas County's commissioners. And I know that they did kind of a preliminary dive into what it would cost to break away from Tri-County and create their own county health department. And then they got more amenable to working with Tri-County. So I have a feeling that they did some initial digging and found out that the price tag to get out of Tri-County and create their own health department is pretty high. And I am familiar with all three of those commissioners, and they're not necessarily the types to run out and spend gobs and gobs of money that they don't have to. But I'm going to be interested to see what they do next, because their constituency has been very loud in Douglas County about not wanting these things. So that story remains to be told, Corey. We're just going to have to wait and see what happens next.
Okay. Yep. Thank you.
All right, Corey, have a good day. Let me grab Tim. Hey, Tim, you were on KOA. What's on your mind?
Hi, Mandy.
Hello.
Great show today. Just want to let you know that all things are political, so nothing's off the board. My only comment is that I know you're trying to do the science. He always dodged your questions, like Dave said, and you always had some kind of good answer to come back to him. My question is, since when did the people elect him to make decisions about my child or my health? That was the question I would like you to have asked him. Since when is he an elected official? I'll leave it at that. Thank you, Mandy.
No, it's a great question, and I appreciate the call. I actually had that on my list. I mean, does the creation of Tri-County Health actually give them statutory powers? And the other question I didn't get to was, what are the penalties? What are the penalties if a school says, we're not going to do this? We're just not going to comply. What are you going to send cops to the door to shut the thing down? That'll be cool for a bunch of kindergartners. That'll be super awesome. Why don't you arrest a bunch of elementary school teachers? You can perp walk them out the front door of the elementary school. Like, what are the ramifications here? I don't know. I'm beginning to think that it's time, and you guys know I'm a rule follower. I wore the damn mask the first time. I'm not doing it again. I don't care if I don't walk into a business for the next year. I'm not wearing a mask anymore. I'm not doing it. I'm just not doing it. So there was a lot of questions I did not get to. That was a little frustrating. Let me grab Tom in Lakewood, 303-713-8585. That's 303-713-8585. Hello, Tom. What's on your mind?
Hi, Mandy. I had a question about the Swedish mask project.
The Danish mask study. Are you talking about the Danish mask study or the Swedish policy towards COVID?
No, I think the Danish mask study.
Okay.
My understanding was 5,000 people wore masks, 5,000 people didn't wear masks, and neither one of them got COVID in a more significant manner than the other.
Well, there was 5,000 total people, to be clear, 5,000 total subjects, half wore masks, and it didn't break down exactly to 2,500. There was slightly more in one category than the other. Half wore masks everywhere, half were never wore masks. So that was the test.
Okay.
Real world environment.
And which
so
one of them got COVID? My understanding is that the mask isn't designed to prevent you from getting COVID. It's designed to prevent you from spreading. That the mask keeps your droplets from flying into other people. That
but
it doesn't
what about,
necessarily...
Let me ask you a question, Tom. What about aerosols?
Sure.
Because the COVID particle itself is way smaller than, say, a micron that is from a cigarette puff. Like if you're wearing your mask and you walk by someone smoking a cigarette, can you smell that cigarette smoke?
Right. I understand
Then you can
that.
Get COVID. because COVID is smaller than that cigarette smoke.
But am I wrong, or haven't they been saying from the beginning that the reason to wear the mask isn't to keep yourself from getting COVID, it's to try to help you prevent spreading it?
Like, right. Same thing applies. If I am wearing a mask and I exhale smoke, if I exhale smoke while wearing a mask, does it come out of the mask?
Yes, it does, okay. Mandy, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about spittle. I'm talking about bigger things.
I understand that, but do you realize that every time you exhale, Tom, right now when you exhale, there are tiny, tiny, tiny particles of aerosol that fly out of your mouth and zoom all over the room. That's called breathing.
Sure.
You don't have to be sneezing or coughing or spitting. You don't have to do any of that. And COVID is smaller than a vast majority of things that you're already exhaling. So in every exhalation...
Let me say it this way. If they had done the study where 2,500 people wore masks in a huge room and 2,500 people came into that room without masks, okay, and 2,500 people that had COVID wore the masks, right? And then in another room, you have 2,500 people that don't have COVID wearing the masks. To me, that would explain better whether or not the masks worked. Because if the same number of people then that walked into these rooms unmasked got COVID or didn't get COVID, if the numbers were the same then, that would say, yeah, the masks don't work. But if you were asked to walk into a room with 2,500 people with COVID who had masks on and 2,500 people with COVID who didn't have masks on, which room would you rather walk into?
I don't think it matters. If you're talking about close quarters, that's a whole different conversation. I'm a big believer in social distancing. I'm a big believer in washing hands.
I'm talking about a schoolroom.
But a schoolroom, you're not going to have 2,500 people in one room. If you have kids in a schoolroom, I got to tell you, for kids, I don't think it matters. Now, college students, I don't think they need to mask up, but I think that they may want to vaccinate themselves because now you're getting into a situation where you could get sicker and maybe end up in the hospital. It's all about risk reward, and I don't think masks do enough to say, no, I wouldn't walk into a room with people not masked. It's the same amount of risk. Would I walk into a room with 2,500 people in it that had COVID, masked or unmasked? No, I wouldn't. I just wouldn't. It's a bad choice to do that.
Would you rather have them have masks or not masks? That's all I'm asking. If you're given the choice between
I'm going to stand by my word, Tom. I'm going to stand by my word on this. Tom, I don't think it matters enough to make a difference. I think if you walk into a room and you're the lone soul who doesn't have COVID and there's 2,500 people with masks on, there's a good chance you're going to get COVID. If you walk into a room with 2,500 people without masks that have COVID, there's a good chance you're going to get COVID. I mean, just the sheer exhalations at that point. But we're not talking about that in a classroom setting. The people at risk in a classroom setting are the teachers, not the students. And I have study after study that show that very same thing.
But the point, again, for the mask, my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding from the beginning is that what they say about
the mask. Oh, no, Tom, no. Excuse me, Tom, if I could. I just want to remind you, in the beginning, Dr. Anthony Fauci told us we didn't need to wear masks for COVID. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. In the beginning, that's what was said. So let's go back to the beginning and stay there. Anyway, taking a quick break. I have some amazing text messages, and they're coming in so fast. They're going by so quickly that I cannot get them before they are gone. Let's talk to Susan Witkin. We'll get some of those next. What do you got for me, Susan?
We're going to dip into a little bit of what the president had to say to the Americans today about withdrawing from Afghanistan. Oh, and in case you missed it, at UC Health Center, yeah, they had to make a big cut on the team of the Denver Broncos today. And we've got it for you at 2:30 right here on KOA News Radio, 850 AM and 94.1 FM.
With Dr. John Douglas is already up. Thanks to Coover. He turned that very, very quickly. I just sent it out on Facebook and Twitter. I would love for you guys to share that because I think more people need to hear the sort of flimsy underpinnings of the mask mandate that's been put on all kids right now. And again, I just checked on Twitter on the break. to see if I saw any indication that the Douglas County Commission has anything to say. As of now, they don't have anything publicly out there. So we'll see. I'm not letting this go. I'm not. I'm in favor of all mitigation measures that I think have been proven by science. Hand washing, super important. Out of every non-medical intervention you can do, washing your hands is by far demonstrated over and over and over again in study after study after study to be one of the most effective ways to not get sick. I'm a big believer in that. I've always been a big believer in personal, like, you know, space. So spacing is not a challenge. Do you still space when you're at the grocery store, Dave? Do you stand well behind the people in front of you in line?
Absolutely not. No, I do.
But mostly because I just don't want to talk to anyone else. You know, I'm like, oh, no.
After the 2 weeks after I got my vaccination, my second shot, since then, I don't wear masks. I don't space unless the rules require it. And then I follow the rule. But as far as I'm pretty much on the same page as you are as far as masks. If they make me wear a mask, I'll look for another business that doesn't require it that sells the same product.
Dave and I were talking about the fact that the Denver Center for the Performing Arts is now requiring masks at all of their events. And I said, dang.
All the indoor events, yes.
Dang, would have liked to have gone to some stuff this year after no theater and no music over the last year. But I'm not going to participate, and I don't have to. And I'm sure that they're going to fill up the auditorium with people who are happy to slap a mask on. And that's the beautiful thing about choice, right?
I mean, I'm going to go to Opera Colorado and spend 3.5 hours sitting with a mask on my face. No, not going to do it.
Well, and then I thought about this, Dave. So the last time I was on an American Airlines flight, they gave no service, like no service at all. Okay. We got like a glass of water hurled at us as we walked, you know, what it was sat there. But there was a flight attendant who was like Nurse Ratched. And I think I talked about this after it happened. She was just walking up and down the aisle. She was just walking up and she was looking at everybody's masks. I mean, she was a woman on a mission. She could have been smiling brightly, but I wouldn't know because her face was covered with a mask that shows the important things about human emotion. Are they going to do that at the theater? If I'm sitting in the dead center at the Denver Center for the Performing Arts Buell Theater, is there going to be a mask person walking up and down the aisles, flashing flashlights in people's faces? How exactly are you going to tell me in the middle of the Buell Theater, how are you going to know that I don't have my mask over my face? How? Do you see what I'm saying? It's like one of those things where how are you going to enforce it? By the way,
How do you enforce these things? Let's say movie theaters, for example, the lights go down, it's dark. How do you enforce a mask mandate then?
And ultimately, I think it's just super frustrating. You know why this interview with Dr. Douglas is so irritating? I really was expecting science. I was truly expecting this is what we based our decision on. These things, these scientific things are what we discussed, what we based our decision on. And I didn't get that. And that's disappointing. And I think there's a responsibility there that was dropped. And I don't know how to fix that. I'm going to try and get Dr. Fielding. She is one of the members of Tri-County that voted against all this nonsense. So I'm going to try and find her and get her on the show to find out if we can get a little more information about the background machinations of what happens at these meetings. Because obviously these things are not connecting. They're not adding up. 2 and 2 does not equal 5. And that's what I feel like right now. Let me grab Jennifer very quickly because we only have a few minutes before we do of the day. Hey, Jennifer, you're on KOA.
Hey, Mandy. My heart's breaking. I just checked out at King Soopers, had to go buy the first masks for my first grader that he's had to wear through the whole pandemic. And I'm really torn on this deal because, I mean, my husband and I and our family, we vaccinated when we were eligible to vaccinate. I just don't understand how we are at the point we are right now. Especially when you consider we're a rural school. Our school has an unbelievable filtration system set up already that they installed that far exceeds anything these masks are going to do. And we're slapping masks on these little
itty bitties.
Jennifer, I'm already, my phone is blowing up with other moms at my daughter's school, and we're making decisions about civil disobedience. And frankly, my daughter's in the sixth grade. I don't know if I would subject a first grader to civil disobedience. I don't like people who use their children as political tools. I've never liked that. I really am uncomfortable with that. But my daughter is 12 years old. And she's old enough to have a conversation and participate in this conversation. So when she gets home this evening, we'll have a conversation about it. I will take her temperature, not really take her temperature. I'm just saying how she feels about it. And we will discuss it. But people in my daughter's school, to your point, Jennifer, our school is almost brand new. And the system, what is the air handlers or whatever, they were designed for this kind of stuff. So we already have the super HEPA filter, new air, whatever it is, transfer. We have all that stuff in our school. And Tri-County Health doesn't care. Because to your point, why should your kid be treated the same as a kid who unfortunately goes to a school who doesn't have all this stuff? Why these blanket edicts don't make any sense to me at all. At all. I'm sorry about your little one having to go to school in a mask, Jennifer. Hopefully, soon it will just be at Halloween when that happens.
That's right. Thank you again, Mandy. And I can't wait to hear from Dr. Fielding. I was giving her lots of praise last night as we listened to the call, and we're hoping for the best, but it was not to be.
Oh, Jennifer, and I knew before the meeting started that they were going to put masks on kids. I mean, there was a 0% chance that was going any other way. Really, there was 0% chance. I appreciate the phone call so much, Jennifer, and have a great day. No, I'll update you guys on what my daughter decides, because ultimately, like I said, she's 12, but she's only 12. Like you look at a kid at this age and you're like, well, she's 12, but she's only 12. You're like, and again, if your kids are politically active and up to speed and they want to participate in some kind of civil disobedience, more power to them. I am very uncomfortable when people use little children as political pawns. I don't care if it's left wing, right wing.
Especially when it's
care.
Obvious that those children don't
have
really
no
understand
idea.
The issues
exactly.
that are being demonstrated for or against.
We had a conversation with my daughter not too long ago, actually, about the fact that she made a comment based on something that I had mentioned to her in passing about a certain issue. And I said, hey, I appreciate what you're doing. In saying that comment, you're backing up my opinion. You're parroting my opinion. But if you don't understand where that opinion came from, you need to keep it to yourself, because you're going to wade yourself into a conversation that you're not ready to back up. And so be aware of that. Don't just parrot what somebody else said to you. Find out the background, find out the information. And she was like, okay, I'll do that. So, and now she's reading my blog. So I'm super excited about that. It's the only time she pays attention to me, and it's on the internet. But now it's time for the most exciting segment on the radio of its kind in the world of the day. Wow, I just threw my back out yelling of the day. Oh, God. Oh, that's a new one for me. Dang
it. At least you didn't throw your voice out.
I know. That's happened many times before, though.
Yes.
All right. So what is the word of the day, please, Dave?
Word of the day is an adjective.
Okay.
It is fatuous, F-A-T-U-O-U-S, fatuous, an adjective.
Doesn't that mean kind of like a, it's the opposite of a person of substance, a lightweight, kind of a, it's not something important, it's just a fatuous thing. Remotely correct, anything? Am I in the right track?
Remotely on the right track, but I don't think I can give you credit if anyone has a better definition.
Let's see what Kuv has. Who's here? Is BK here? We got Dragon.
Hi, is here.
BK is in the middle of Bronco hell right now with George Payton and Vic Fangio pressers.
Sure, there you go. We'll take BK off the list. We got Kuv, we got Mandy, we got Dragon. Let's do it. What does fatuous mean, Coover?
I was once fat, but now I'm not.
No, that's not on the right track.
That should have been Dragon's guess.
That's pretty well. I got something for you. Almost as good.
Okay, what is it?
The art of passing gas.
Oh no, that's flatulence. Flatulence sounds the same. That's totally wrong.
No, fatuous means something that's silly and pointless or lacking intelligence.
The art of passing gas.
That That's what I
said. That's why I said you were on the right. You didn't quite say that, but you were on the right track.
All right.
The teacher got frustrated by the fatuous questions that showed the students hadn't been paying attention.
Yeah. Okay, the Summer Olympic Games feature two kinds of canoe sports, canoe sprint and canoe slalom. What's the difference between the two?
Well, sprint's in a straight line. Slalom, you zigzag, right?
That's what I think.
Yeah.
Based on our vast skiing knowledge, let's see. In canoe slalom, competitors use canoes or kayaks to race through whitewater rapids instead of flat water, which is canoe sprint. So it's also flat water versus bumpy water, I guess.
Hey, all right.
There you go. All right, what is our Jeopardy category?
Category for today is Brit speak. These are words and expressions that the Brits...
I think I'm going to be good at this one. Okay.
Yeah, I've watched enough Top Gear. I think I got this.
Exactly. I watched Trainspotting.
Will someone pass me the bag of crisps? I am hankering for the dragon.
What are French fries?
Wrong.
What?
Mandy. What are potato chips?
Correct.
What? Yes.
I made that same error when I went over this. Yes. Okay. If Mum takes little Alistair to a childminder, he's going to... Mandy?
What is a daycare center?
That is correct.
Yes.
Very good. A landlord would refer to one of these as a flat.
Dragon.
Mandy?
Dragon.
Dragon. What is an apartment?
Dang it.
Correct.
Come on, Coov. I know you've seen enough Doctor Who. Come on.
All these years watching Masterpiece Theater, it's all coming together right now in this category.
I just know about Wimbledon and strawberries and cream.
Wimbledon. Not ton. Anyway, go ahead. Cheerio.
Long before it was the name of a computer, it was Brit speak for a raincoat. This is a good one.
Oh my gosh. What's the name of the computer? Mandy, what is Watson?
Yes. That is absolutely wrong.
Dang it!
Oh, I was like, wait a minute, I've never heard that.
Long before it was the name of a computer, it was Brit speak for a raincoat.
Oh, Mandy. Oh my God, I'm so mad right now. I know it. I know it when nobody else answers it.
Anyone?
No, I have no clue.
What's a Macintosh? No.
That is correct.
Really?
But too late.
Yes. Huh.
Yes, that's a raincoat in England. Finally, for sports and working out, you need a good pair of trainers, which are these.
Mandy.
Yeah.
What are athletic shoes?
Correct.
Yes! Phew.
Masterpiece Theater paid off.
Exactly. That and, you know, all those Sherlock Holmes with Benedict Cumberbatch. Yes. Those are always also very, very helpful. All right. Tomorrow we have a baseball game, but we have a tiny show, right? No, we have no show tomorrow.
No show.
Okay, so no show tomorrow. We'll be back on Thursday. You can find the podcast with Dr. John Douglas on my Facebook page, on my Twitter page, and also on our podcast page at KOA News Radio. Share it. Thank you. We'll be back tomorrow. Keep it right here for Big Al and JoJo coming up next.